Hey guys, did you know that we now have, according to the numbers, 30,000 weekly listeners? Berto, you gave me this number. Paulette, did you know this?
Wait, people are going to hear this later?
Yeah, just imagine a stadium full of 30,000.
No, I'm not talking.
30,000 people that are listening to us right now. Imagine that.
I cannot picture that.
Yeah, I'm going to freeze up now and not talk.
Right. They can hear us, but they can't see the fact that none of us are wearing pants.
We think we're just sitting in a room with our friends, but there's really 30,000 people here. It's like a bugged, it's like being in a bugged room.
To be fair, 29,000 of them have their thing on by default, and it's just always playing. So whatever comes on, comes on.
They're just trying to drown out their kids or their wife.
That's
like, put something on, Jesus.
Yeah, and the other 1,000 are me, because I just keep hitting subscribe, subscribe. Well, this is the podcast that is listened to by 30,000 people every week, and it is called the Psychology in Seattle Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I am chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program at Antioch University, Seattle, and I'm also a licensed therapist.
I am layperson Paulette Perhatch.
My name is Humberto Casnea, and I invent stats for companies that are doing like podcasts and videocasts and stuff like that.
Interesting, because I got this figure from you. So.
Oh, that's different.
So according to the numbers, we have 4 times more listeners this year than we did last year. So our numbers have increased by 400%.
I think that's the Paulette bump. I got to be honest. Sorry. I stole it from Colbert. Oh my God. Jon Stewart is going off the air this week. I can't live.
I know.
Can we talk about
this?
Is this
his last week?
Can we talk about grief? It's like tomorrow's his last show.
Oh, wow.
Can I ask you a question? So I feel like everyone I know considers the Colbert Report better than the Daily Show. Where do you guys land?
I did for a while. I was watching the Colbert Show first, but my boyfriend was definitely the other way. I think he's got a different style, and it seemed fresher because Jon Stewart's been on the air for 16 years. So it was like a new toy to play with. So then I went to Colbert Report first, then Daily Show on my DVR. Mm.
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with both of them, and more with the Daily Show than the Colbert Report because, man, this is funny and all, but it's also depressing because it's also true.
Yeah.
So then I kind of stopped watching. And then when I started watching the Colbert Report, I thought, yeah, stick it to Bill O'Reilly. But then after a while, it was like no one who needed to get the joke got the joke.
Yeah.
And so it just became its own show. And honestly, I haven't watched it that much.
Can I just say, Jon Stewart, if you are one of our 30,000 listeners, then I will just have your babies. Like, no questions asked.
He has babies he's just going to give them to you?
I'm going to take them.
Whoa.
So where do you think, other than the United States, we have the most listeners? What do you think?
Prison.
Uganda.
No, it's not on the list.
Oh. UK maybe?
UK.
England.
Great Britain is fourth. So US is number one.
Okay. We're number one.
I would think Canada.
Canada is number 5.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
What? Australia.
Australia is number 3.
What?
Who's number 2?
I should know because I did compile these numbers, but I kind of forget.
The Philippines. You'd never guess.
The Philippines.
Yeah, so we got U.S., Philippines.
The entire country listens to us.
Australia, Great Britain, Canada, Germany.
Wait, number-wise or ratio of people-wise? Because if it's number-wise, then we're huge in the Philippines.
Well, it's by far most of our listeners are from the U.S., but the second most, you know.
By number.
By number is Philippines. Then Australia, Great Britain, Canada, Germany, Japan, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Ireland, China, Brazil, South Korea, New Zealand, Italy, Hong Kong, it's separated out from China, which is France, Thailand, Switzerland, South Africa, India, Vietnam, and the Netherlands.
I mean, that's cool.
Amazing.
It's cool that there's even just one person in any of those countries.
I'm obsessed with that idea that you can be in Uganda right now, and if you have an internet connection, you can be listening to a psychologist in Seattle.
Yeah.
Talk about that. It's such an amazing opportunity that we just kind of got used to. We're like, oh yeah, but it's crazy amazing.
Totally.
People don't take advantage of it because you don't realize that
the
information
reach
is power. And it's like, ah.
And the weird thing is about half, if not more than half of the emails I get are from people outside the United States, outside the US. It's kind of strange. If I just went on emails alone, I would think most of our listeners were not in the US. I wonder why that is. Do you have any theories on that?
Most of our emails?
A disproportionate amount of emails come from people outside the U.S.
Maybe because you're their source of information.
I wonder if it's also cultural. do a lot of U.S. people still send emails to people about things?
Right.
Or are they just Facebooking and Twittering and
yeah.
Instagramming? And
yeah, I don't know.
Are you Twittering?
So let's do some tougher bluffs, people. I'm going to continue some of the tougher bluffs that we were doing the other day, which was a study by Orlinsky et al. Regarding therapists who go to therapy. So these are some stats that they found regarding how many therapists go to therapy around the world.
I failed that tougher bluff.
What does the et al. Mean again?
And others.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what the al is the abbreviation for.
It's some Latin word, yeah. I think, for...
I love them.
So, tougher bluff. Among psychotherapists worldwide, French therapists are the most likely to have been in therapy. So, tougher bluff. Among psychotherapists worldwide, French therapists are the most likely to have been in therapy before. Tough or bluff?
The French therapists have multiple affairs that they're conducting at any time. They must have a lot of things to discuss with a therapist, so I'm going to go tough.
Okay. I'm just laughing about thinking about all the culturally ignorant things we can say. So bad. Well, the French eat a lot of cheese, so I don't know. I'm going to say, I just get mad because I know I'm going to be wrong. I'm pre-mad because I know I'm wrong already. I'm going to say bluff.
You were right to be pre-mad. It's tough. 99% of French psychotherapists have been in therapy before.
Is that because it's mandated?
It's mandated in the U.S. for the most part, too.
But it's okay.
You know, last time we were talking about this, just for context, 12% of U.S. psychotherapists have never been to therapy, whereas only 1% of French therapists.
So how does that work? I don't remember the explanation for if it's mandated, why are there...
Well, each program will choose whether or not to mandate it.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a licensing requirement. All right, tougher bluff. Due to the changes in grad school requirements, younger therapists are more likely to have been in therapy themselves as opposed to older therapists. So due to changes in grad school requirements that we're talking about here, younger therapists are more likely to have been in therapy than older therapists. Tougher bluff.
I'm going to say that's tough.
I'm actually going to go the other way because I'm going to say there's probably more variety of grad programs these days. And some of them, they're like, yeah, I guess you don't need it if you do this. Or so I'm going to go bluff.
It is bluff. I don't know why it's bluff, but my idea is that the older you are, the more likely you've been in therapy before. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, because more years have gone.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a 22-year-old grad student, you know, there's probably less likely you've ever been in therapy than if you're 70. You know what I mean? All right. Tougher bluff. In the U.S., psychiatrists, maybe you saw this one on Facebook, but... In the U.S., psychiatrists are more likely to have been in therapy than psychologists, counselors, and marriage and family therapists. What do you think? Tougher bluff. In the U.S., psychiatrists, medical doctors, are more likely to have been in therapy than psychologists, counselors, and marriage and family therapists. What do you think, Paulette?
I'm going to think bluff because of the typical stereotype of the godlike doctor that doesn't need help from anybody.
Okay.
You asking if I got a god complex? I am God. and name that quote, by the way.
I don't know, but my friend just had a similar quote from a crazy captain she knew.
Oh, this is from the movie Malice. It's Alec Baldwin. One
he said the sea was God and he was just a prophet. He interpreted God.
Oh.
We totally should have known that because that's a really popular movie.
Malice?
Yeah.
What? With Nicole Kidman, Alec Baldwin,
huge.
Bill Pullman?
I know.
That sounds big in the 80s, though.
It wasn't huge.
I was probably like, what?
Huge. It was the 90s.
It was a huge movie.
It was
we should have
a popular movie.
Yeah, I know. So popular.
Oh, are you actually saying you've never seen it?
Of course I've seen it like hundreds of times. Who hasn't seen it 100 times?
So you're saying you haven't seen it?
All 30,000 of our listeners have seen it.
Oh my God.
A total of 500,000 times.
I'm going to show you this movie.
You don't need to show it to
me. It's a great movie.
I've memorized it.
Oh, you have seen it.
I've seen it so many times.
Oh, you're pulling my leg somehow. Anyways, my point is this. I'm going to go tough. More psychiatrists get therapy because they're stressed with their medical doctorates and they have to do their internships and their residencies.
You're wrong. It's bluff. They're less likely. Only 61% of U.S. psychiatrists have been in therapy as compared to about 90% of psychologists, counselors, and marriage and family therapists. Around the globe, psychiatrists are less likely to have been in therapy. And, you know, there are various reasons for this. I'm guessing, we can make fun of psychiatrists, you know, and speculate that.
Oh, I do.
That it might be because they believe that they're God. I don't know. Certainly, I know a lot of therapists that think they're gods, too.
Can I ask how much a psychiatrist makes a year?
Well, they're medical doctors, so they generally make good money.
But it used to be more, right? Like psychiatry went downhill a bit.
What do you mean, what?
Like psychiatry's golden age, I feel, was like the 70s, 80s.
Well, it depends on what we mean by golden age, because a lot more people are going to counseling these days than before. But there are insurance companies are paying less for it now than they were in the past. But I don't know the stats on that. But anyway, psychiatrists, some of them don't do any counseling. Some of them only do med management. And if you want to make a lot of money in the States, or at least in Washington State, you, as far as I can tell, based on their behavior, you just crank out the med visits. So you have every hour you have four patients that you see, and you either prescribe meds or you monitor their meds. And this can be apparently a very lucrative practice. Whereas if you're doing just psychotherapy, which takes a whole hour, you'll get paid a lot less per hour in the end.
Do you think that leads to over-medicating people?
I mean, it kind of incentivizes the practice of, you know, it's like you go to your auto mechanic and you say, do I need to replace my brakes? You know, they have an incentive to say yes when maybe it's no.
That's
interesting. And so, you know, and there's a lot of exposés regarding this and articles that have been written about the over-medication of people and the irresponsible use of medication. There are those in psychiatry that are a lot more responsible. Mm-hmm. In general, they're pretty responsible, so it's not as bad as the media portrays, that's for sure.
Have you read Ellen Forney's Marbles book?
I don't think so.
Oh my God, it's so amazing. It's a like graphic memoir about going on pills for being bipolar, and it's just super honest and open and out there, and it's probably the opposite view that many of like you guys out there listening would have, you know, like the patient and just really what she went through. And it's like a comic book, and it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's super.
It is a comic book, or
it's a graphic memoir is what you would call it.
Okay. Oh,
so
graphic novel memoir.
But I think she calls herself a cartoonist, and she would
be
okay with that. Graphic memoir.
Graphic? No. The book.
Oh, Marbles.
Marbles. It's called Malice.
Hey, listen. 1993, 46 million domestic gross.
You don't have to tell me.
Aaron Sorkin was one of the writers.
Of course.
It has a huge actor pool in it.
I've seen the documentary.
Hey, use your phone to figure out what percentage of the Philippines listens to us. That's what I wanted my phone for earlier.
All right. I want to remind everyone to go to our website and donate. There have been a little bit more people donating lately, which is nice. Some people are suggesting that I sign up for some kind of weekly subscription kind of deal, or monthly subscription, where you like sign up and then every month it just sort of, you know, drains your bank account a little bit.
But Kirk, shouldn't we be using reverse psychology to get people to donate?
Don't donate. Don't do it.
Sorry. It's the worst joke. I couldn't help it.
Also, you can email us. And you can also support the show by taking one of the continuing ed courses that are on our website. A few of you have done that. That's another revenue stream that is for the podcast. We have yet to make back the money that we've spent on the various expenses for the podcast. So it'd be nice if you could do some of that. You could also like us on Facebook and participate in our weekly Tough or Bluff games, which is always a blast to do with the listeners. All right, Tough or Bluff. In the U.S. and around the globe, humanistic therapists, which you might not know very... Do you know what a humanistic therapist is?
Is it related to the like common term humanism?
No.
Okay.
It is loosely related to that. But basically, humanistic therapists were born in the 60s and 70s, where they were, you know, sort of the hippie generation, baby boomers. And it was all about, you know, it was kind of the birth of positive psychology, believing in people. They were anti-Freudian. They were anti-behaviorism. They were like, everyone is a flower, and if you
go on,
live in the moment. So, okay. So in the U.S. and around the globe, and by the way, I adhere to humanistic psychology tenets in my therapy. But anyway, in the U.S. and around the globe, humanistic therapists are the least likely to have been in therapy, Tough or Bluff. In the U.S. and around the globe, humanistic therapists are the least likely to have been in therapy, as opposed to cognitive behavioral therapists, psychodynamic therapists, and I think systems therapists and all the other kinds.
It's interesting because from your tone of voice, I thought you were making fun of it. And then you're like, that's what I do. I was like, oh, okay. So I would think that that person would be less likely to go to therapy.
I'm going to go bluff. I think they are more likely because they're like, yeah, man, I need therapy too.
You're right. Bluff. The people who have been to therapy the least are the cognitive behavioral therapists, which is, if you're in the biz, would it makes intuitive sense because they're the most, let's see, they believe that they, okay, so humanistic therapists, psychodynamic therapists, and to some extent, systems and family therapists believe that your personality is a part of the therapy. So, and that your issues will become a part of the therapy and will hinder therapy if you don't work on your issues. Whereas cognitive behavioral therapists, in general, do not adhere so much to those kinds of ideas and are more technical in their interventions. They're more like clinicians who are doing something to the therapist rather or to the client rather than the other kinds of therapy where your humanness is a part of what's happening in the room. I'm explaining this in the most simple way I possibly can. Is this making any sense to you too?
Yeah, it's what's his name? Michael
Douglas?
No. Who's the butler in Batman?
Keaton. Wait, that's not the
butler.
Oh, the
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
It's Michael Caine treating Steve Martin. You know, he's like just very clinician-like and stuff. It's the Freud approach, you know. Wow. Like, I will analyze you detachedly and make a conclusion scientifically.
What movie are you referring to now?
Oh, well, the first movie I was referring to is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which I know you've not seen and no one's heard of.
No, I've seen that.
No, I know that it's all
in
my
the
movies.
Theater,
are
I saw it 1986.
No, no one's seen these movies. Star Wars, little movie called Star Wars.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, Star Wars I saw soon after I saw Malice. Okay, Trevor Bluff. Oh, no, sorry, going back to that.
Number one at the box office, the weekend it opened.
Wait, I want to talk about something that really traumatized me is that I saw Spaceballs before I saw Star Wars. And I don't know where my parents were on that one, but really nothing has ever been okay since in my life.
It is very traumatic.
It's been terrible. Sorry, we can go on.
No, that's funny.
I had to get that out.
How old were you when you saw Spaceballs?
God, I don't know. Too young, like just kind of, because I remember, it's so funny when you see movies later and you realize where all your weird memories came from, like Total Recall, that thing coming out of Arnold Schwarzenegger's nose. And like five scenes from that movie make up like the majority of my traumatizing childhood memories. Now that I've seen it, I'm like, oh, triple boob. Yeah, that really upset me.
Wait. So what was going through your head when you finally saw Star Wars?
Just like, Jesus, that merchandising scene that I originally was just like, merchandising. What is he talking about? I'm like, toy. And then I hadn't seen Alien either, so the thing coming out of the guy's stomach.
Oh.
I was really behind.
When you saw Star Wars, were you like, oh, this is a ripoff of Spaceballs?
Can I say that there's no strategy in our current culture and society to get someone up to speed on the movies that were made before they were born? There's no structure in place. There needs to be like a structure.
There's a structure. They call them boyfriends.
No, but seriously.
I've definitely seen a lot
kind of
man movies.
Kind of hinting at a class that could exist.
Just with the structure of like school, they're like, all right, now you see Bambi, you're 10, get ready.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what's interesting?
They should have
is,
like cliff notes or something.
Well, just like you'd read the classics, you should watch the classics.
Yeah. I agree. Malice. Dirty Rotten Scandal.
But it can't be like a classic film.
I hope
film
you get blame
class.
Mail. What do you mean you've not seen Malice?
Like Pulp Fiction. It can't be like too uppity. It's got to be like, these are the movies everyone's talking about. Like,
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
It's true.
I like it.
So getting back to the last Tougher Bluff, in the U.S., among dynamic, humanistic, and eclectic therapists, eclectic meaning they adhere to lots of things, about 94% of them have been to therapy, whereas 89% of systemic therapists, which are generally couple and family therapists, have been to therapy, and only 78% of cognitive behavioral therapists have been to therapy before. So again, among dynamic, humanistic, and eclectic therapists, 94% have been to therapy, 89% of systemic therapists have been to therapy, and only 78% of CBT therapists have been to therapy before. And again, this is all therapists. So if you go to a CBT therapist in the U.S., there's a 22% chance, even if they're very experienced, that they've never been to therapy before. I just find that to be shocking. Is that shocking to you?
Tell me how that makes you feel.
Shocked.
Remember that scene in Malice when he's like really upset? Okay, Tevra Bluff. In the U.S., women are 12% more likely, maybe you saw this one on Facebook too. In the U.S., women are 12% more likely to have been in therapy than male therapists. So in the U.S., women therapists are 12% more likely to have been in therapy than male therapists. Tougher bluff. Berto?
Like when they're on their periods or?
I'm going to go bluff. It's like 20% more likely.
Okay. Why do you think?
I think there is, you know, maybe I'm projecting, but I feel like there is more potential negative associations to a male of being weak. And going to therapy seems like a weak thing to do
right.
by societal standards.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I agree. I think, well, I don't know if it's more, but like, I think it's...
So you think it's 12% or not 12%?
I think more.
So bluff too. Yeah. Well, you're both right for the wrong reason. The men, men are only 1% less likely... Which statistically, that's according crazy. To this study, basically means in the U.S.,
okay.
male and female therapists have about the same rate of having been to therapy before.
Oh, that's good.
That's actually encouraging.
Because I think that, yeah, men do have a problem opening up sometimes. But women do too. I just think it is skewed.
Yeah. Believe me, as a professor of mostly women, because mostly women are therapists these days, there are plenty of women who have a hard time opening up and talking about their own feelings.
Do you know how few guys there are in writing classes?
Really?
I mean, really? One or two, maybe. It's crazy.
Yeah. Our country is really weird about occupations and hobbies when it comes to gender. Really? Therapy is dominated by women.
But you don't see it because I think that the men get more... attention. There's this novelist just sent out her novel to 50 people, and when she sent it with her female name on it, almost nobody wanted it, and when she sent it with a guy's name on it, I think 13 people asked for it. It was in the Whoa. Guardian. It was crazy. It was really extreme.
Yeah.
You know, though, female impersonation is largely male. It's a largely male profession.
It's true.
Sometimes I feel like I'm impersonating a female.
Well, we're all playing a role in terms of our gender, that's for sure. All right, tougher bluff.
By the way, I feel like we should change the rule slightly because if you say bluff, but your bluff
is wrong,
is like 180 degrees wrong, you should not get the point.
All right, tougher bluff. Around the globe, women therapists are 5% more likely to have been in therapy than men. So around the globe, this is not the U.S. So in the U.S., about the same, men and women. But around the globe, women therapists are 5% more likely to have been in therapy than men. You know, we're talking about all cultures.
Yeah.
South Korea, Israel, France, Russia. What do you think, tougher bluff?
You know, one of the things that it makes me think of is when I was in Peace Corps and my host mom, she was just like a third world woman. She just had shit to do and she was working all the time and she worked her butt off and she just didn't complain. She just did it. So I think that there globally might still be some of that attitude. Although we are talking about women who became psychologists, but I wonder if that's a factor.
Yeah.
So I think that it's more men.
Okay. So you think bluff?
Yeah. Bluff.
I say tough. What was the percentage?
5%. Women are 5% more likely.
Yeah. I say tough because actually, kind of for that reason, but because of that reason, I feel like there's probably not that many female therapists in a lot of countries that are like third world and stuff like that. So they probably like, it's a more self-selected audience and they're probably very likely to be self-reflective.
Well, it's hard to generalize to the entire world in terms of what it's like for these people. But anyway, it is tough. Around the globe, women are 5% more likely to have been in therapy. And what this study actually kind of demonstrated to me is that therapists around the globe are pretty similar, seemingly, when it comes to this sort of thing. The stats weren't that different from country to country. We're not that different in our different countries. But
I would love to see the breakdown of female to male therapists by country, you know.
Well, it's in the study if you want to look at. All right, just three more along these lines. In Russia, men therapists are more likely to have been in therapy than women. Tougher bluff. In Russia, male therapists are more likely to have been in therapy than women. What do you think?
I don't know. I feel like all these questions are asking me to make stereotypes, and it just feels weird.
All we have is our stereotypical knowledge.
Yeah. I don't know. All right, what was the question again?
In Russia, men therapists are more likely to have been in therapy than women.
I think that is bluff.
I'm going to go tough because having been to a Russian bathhouse recently, I got to conclude they probably need the therapy.
It's tough. They're 3% more likely, which is not that much, but I thought that was interesting because definitely goes against stereotype. I would have said, oh, in Russia, the men are super manly. They don't go to therapy. The women go to therapy. But yeah, according to the study, a little bit more likely. All right, two more. In the U.S., the most prevalent reason for going to therapy was for training rather than for growth or for personal problems. So you have three reasons why you go to therapy, according to the study. For training, so to learn how to be a therapist by watching another therapist. For growth, personal growth, or for personal problems. So in the U.S., the most prevalent reason cited by the therapist for going to therapy was for training rather than for growth or personal problems. Tough or bluff?
That's a really interesting question. God, I think that's tough. I think that would be true even if people need to go for other reasons.
Yeah, I'm going to say tough for that reason. Like, I think they're like, it was for training.
It's bluff.
Oh.
77% said they went for problems. That's the biggest reason why people go to therapy in the U.S. who are therapists. Then it's 65% said they went for personal growth, and only 38% said they went for training.
Oh, we stand corrected.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, you know, at least the therapists I know and in my program, we really beat it into your head as a therapist that you have problems and you got to work on your shit. And if you don't, if you don't admit you have a problem,
you have a problem.
You got a bigger problem.
Like, every person has a problem.
Yeah, everyone has
a
problem.
That's what I think. I think everyone should go to therapy. I think there should be some structure in society where it's like you have like life help, because life is, I don't know how other people are getting along just fine.
Yeah, totally.
We talked about this in a podcast ages ago that it should be part of your schooling to get therapy. That should be part of your school.
Of any schooling or just?
Yeah, no, like just like you take a physics class and this, you should have to do therapy. Just a better analogy might be just like you might take PE or piano lessons or something. You need to take therapy.
Or life skills or something.
And sometimes you just look back at your life and you're like, yeah, not surprising. Let's review the facts. You know, you're just like, no big deal. Life's hard.
There's so many things I wish someone would have told me in high school or in college. You know what I mean? And things that were very simple that if someone would have told me, or maybe they did tell me, I just wasn't listening. I don't know.
Don't mix those three drugs together.
For me, it's like, this is what we miss when families get more and more. Like, for me, it was just, you know, parents working and stuff. And I was just really independent. But, like, you miss those little moments, those little, like, moments when your mom or dad will tell you something. You're like, I'll always remember that. You know, it's like, and especially with everyone being on their phone all the time, it's like you miss guidance from people who are older and can help you in life, even if it's a boss at work or something.
Well, one thing that I've realized throughout the years is how little I talk to any adults about my life, my actual things going through my head, my problems. Like, it obviously varies from family to family, but in my experience, and I get the feeling it's fairly common from, you know, everyone I've ever met and talked to and stuff, is that I think in a lot of family dynamics, you grow up and you talk about the present time, like, hey, are we going to the zoo this weekend? Or did you finish your homework? But you don't have those like, all right, so tell me, what are your friends? How are you guys doing? Are you any problems you're dealing with? You know, like those conversations, I never had them. I had them a little bit more with my dad, I think, but it was, and he's a psychiatrist though. Like it was kind of like, I think they don't happen a lot, you know? And so, if they did happen with your parents, they're also biased observers. I'm not saying they shouldn't happen with your parents, but I think that's the advantage of having a more unbiased observer as well.
Yeah, I was at a family gathering a while ago, and I was asking one of my younger family members why they didn't talk to other people, or I can't remember exactly how we got on the topic, but she said, it's because you actually ask me questions about me. You're not just like hammering me with those typical questions. You know what I mean? You actually ask me real questions. And I thought I'm getting choked up. Remember that really sad scene in Malice?
Yes, I do. I don't. I've never seen it. No one's seen it.
Yeah, I just remembered it because I often think about that scene in Malice. It gets me teary. But anyway, it made me sad because I thought, really? Like, that's such a rare thing that people actually ask you real, genuine questions and are genuinely interested in you. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
I have such a hard time with that because I am kind of the opposite. Like, I hate small talk. I heard someone say writers hate small talk. And I'm like, oh, it's so true. And I always joke about how I don't know what to say in conversation. Like, I don't want to be like, what do you do for a living? Because that's so American, like, work-centered. But I don't want to be like, what are your passions? Because that's cheesy. Someone said to me one time, what makes your world go round? And I was like, hee-hee, that's awesome. But I could never get away with that. So I want those kind of questions. And I don't know how to ask those kind of questions. Sometimes my boyfriend jokes that I go into reporter mode where I'm just like, tell me this, tell me that. And some people don't want to give up that much information that deeply.
Yeah, I'm similar to you. I think I've always been that way.
Yeah.
And I'll get definite pushback from people. They'll be like, geez, you know, you ask a lot of questions. And I'm like, oh, I thought you would want to talk about yourself. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. You don't want to tell me how many people you've had sex with? That's fine. I mean, I know it's a cocktail party, but let's.
What?
Let's get real.
Yeah. I just wanted to know how many farts you produce in a day. What? What's weird about that? Yeah.
It was very hot this week, wasn't it? It's very sunny. The weather's been crazy, huh?
He's building up to a joke of some sort. Yeah.
No, I'm trying to make small talk.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. All right. Tougher bluff. In the U.S., 12% of therapists indicated their personal therapy was not beneficial. In the U.S., when they asked the U.S. therapist, was your therapy beneficial or not? 12% of them indicated their personal therapy was not beneficial. 12%. Tougher bluff. What do you think?
I think tough.
12% said that it was not beneficial. I'm going to go tough as well. That sounds like a number.
I would have thought it would be much less than that, but it is tough. 12% of therapists in the U.S. indicated that all of their past therapy they've ever been to was not beneficial.
All of it. Oh, my God.
Hey, how do I unscrew this mic? Because I need to do a mic drop because I got that one right. you know, sometimes therapy is not beneficial, I guess. I don't know. No therapy was beneficial. That's a little suspect. You change people.
Well, what if they started going to therapy because they're the kind of person that thinks that everything is beneficial?
What do you mean?
Well, then therapy clearly helped them.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I just want to say that, like, I'm always interested where there's different patterns in societies. Like, someone said to me, every culture has a fermented food. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, fermentation happens everywhere, right? In some form.
What is the U.S. fermented?
Pickles,
oh,
right?
Yeah. But that's like an Eastern
It's a German thing.
Yeah.
But sure. Yeah. I mean, in general, we.
Isn't beer fermented?
At the very least.
Yeah, beer's fermented. But everyone's got beer.
Yeah.
But you're right. Every culture has some sort of fermented
cheese.
Yeah. So
lutefisk.
There's a lot of things like that. And when I think about confession in a lot of religious traditions, that kind of maps on to my Seattle atheist. Like,
going to
I go every week and I say what's in my freaking heart and just cry if I need to or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you feel much lighter.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if different cultures kind of, you know, if the early form of confession was therapy.
Absolutely.
And they were getting the benefits of therapy.
Still is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can imagine it's very similar. It's very similar. You sit down. It's confidential. It is, someone listens well. They don't give advice. You know, there's a definite religious component. And then there's penance sometimes. But sometimes, yeah, you're just in there talking about your life, from my understanding.
And then you trade sex for repentance.
Yeah, especially if you're a young child. But got to make the Catholic joke.
So then I think that there are just built-in benefits that people figured out a long time ago. For people to say it's never been beneficial.
Right. Well, what I think of when I hear that stat, that 12% of therapists, and we're talking like therapists from 1 year into the profession to 40 years into the profession, 12% have said that their past therapy was not beneficial. All I can think of is go to a different therapist. I mean, I've had therapists that were not beneficial to me. But honestly, I would say that they just weren't as beneficial as I was really wanting them to be. But they were probably beneficial on some level. But when a therapist wasn't beneficial to me, I changed therapist. And what it kind of says to me is, I wonder if those people weren't using therapy right, and they weren't really going deep, and they weren't really exploring the darkest corners of their minds, of which everyone has.
There's only so much you can say before I'm going to make a joke.
What?
The deepest, darkest. So, like, for me...
Say the joke!
No.
For me, there's a responsibility that I take when I go to therapy, which is that I'm aware that it's me and my demons that I'm trying to struggle with, and that I am getting help to help deal with them. But I don't blame the therapy when I keep making mistakes. It's like, I'm like, well, this is why I'm going to therapy, and I'm going to keep trying. Because, like, it's not like I have evidence to the contrary. Like, meaning, when I stopped going to therapy, all of a sudden, I started making the right decisions, right? It's just like, if anything, therapy makes me aware that I continue to make a wrong decision. So I...
And that's a benefit.
And that's a benefit.
To know that.
The awareness.
Yeah.
The more you know, you know.
Mm-hmm. Knowing's half the battle, as yes. G.I. Joe said. All right, let's just do a couple emails and then we'll adjourn here. Listener David said, he just emailed, I think I might have sent this to you guys. Listener David says, this afternoon I was listening to the podcast with you, Berto, and Omid talking about herpes and erectile dysfunction while Dan Savage was a few meters away.
So funny.
The setting was Gold's Gym on Broadway. So there I am listening to you three and wanting to get Dan to listen and weigh in. Weigh in, it's probably a pun on Gold's Gym, right? You guys know Dan Savage, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, Dan Savage. I met him one time and he was awesome. And I like went up to him on the street and I was like, all right, this could end badly. And he was really cool. And then my best friend is obsessed with him and she kept stalking him from his Instagram. And I was like, she's like, he was at the coffee shop right around the, or Terry was around the street. And she's like, we have to go right now. Oh, God.
One time I was at Gold's Gym and I saw Dan Savage and I saw this guy looking at him like he was going to talk to him. So I ran up to Dan like, dude, this guy's about to talk to you about who knows what.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
I used to listen to him when I was doing my laundry in the backyard in Paraguay. And my host mom would be like, you look crazy out here just laughing your head off by yourself. Because I would just have my earphones in. I think he's so funny. He's made me spit water more than one time.
Yeah.
Whoa.
He still has a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Love something.
Savage Love.
Savage Love. All right. I want to give a shout out to listener Stephanie, who donated last week, which is nice. Thank you.
Woo!
Thank you, Stephanie. One person, listener Louvie, says... This on the Robin Williams podcast. This was a really good discussion about Robin Williams, his condition, depression, and suicide. I'm glad I listened to this because I'm going through something similar. Oh, that's sad.
That's nice, though.
Yeah. Another listener along these lines, listener Talia, says, I'm so happy that I found your podcast. I've been dealing with depression for the past 6 months. The other day, I listened to a bunch of your podcast episodes on YouTube, and the one on depression and suicide really struck me. You and your co-host, Berto, seem to analyze depression and suicide, depression, or maybe it was O'Donnie, anyway, suicidal depression to a T. I want to thank you for that, because I have no idea why I feel the way I do right now and what I can do to help myself. My friends, in quotes, are not really my friends and really do not understand me. So I have no idea what to do and who to talk to, hence the reason why I decided to send you this message. You seem to understand depression and mental illness, and you are a real psychologist, not some hack on YouTube. You have no idea how helpful and refreshing your podcasts are. Thank you, listener Talia. Ah, that's nice. That's nice, but bittersweet given the fact that listener Talia is suffering from depression and suicidal ideation.
Do you think she was referring to the suicide episode we did?
I don't know. Well, I think so. She's listened to a bunch. My guess is she listened to the depression one and the suicide one.
Because the suicide one, I had a personal transformation in my way of thinking.
Yeah.
And that was very powerful for me.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear that other folks would find it interesting and useful.
Yeah. Right, because you had a cousin that committed suicide.
Yep.
And you held you held some resentment regarding.
And I didn't realize it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a...
And that resentment manifested in unfair judgment of people who commit suicide.
That's right.
Have you read Augustine Burroughs' This Is How?
Uh-uh.
I would just love to recommend that book because as layperson, American layperson...
Yeah.
I thought that book was a joke self-help book. So I was like, oh, I'm going to buy this because I love Augustine Burroughs. He's an awesome writer. Oh. And it was really a self-help book, but just in the way that he does. He's just like, it was a real self-help book, and it was so funny and crazy, and he just tells it like it is. He has this background that lets him do that. He basically cut from his family completely, and it's so funny. So he talks a little bit about depression and suicide. Talia, you might want to check that out.
So to close, I just want to ask people on the podcast here, because I posted this on our Facebook page, that someone suggested that we have a name for our listeners, you know, like,
all right.
Like there's a popular Seattle podcast called TBTL, and they call the listeners the tens of listeners, even though they have like thousands and thousands, but they call them the tens. So, so like Seattle tens and Boston tens. And so, you know, what's the name for our listeners? And I thought, well, you know, if you abbreviate the podcast, you have PIS. And so I was thinking like Pisser.
Yeah, Pissers probably is good.
And then I also thought like Seattleites, which is kind of fun. You know, it's like everyone's a Seattleite or something. And then the listener who suggested that we name our listener suggested the name Kirkies.
The Kirkies,
which is ridiculous.
So, you're turning into the Beyonce of this podcast. I'm just going to say that right now.
And so I asked, and then someone, listener Jose, he said Kirk's Cousins, which I thought was hilarious. And the other person said Pissheads, listener Anita.
That's good.
Pissheads. And then a couple other people chimed in, listener Macy and listener Melissa said Kirkies. They actually like Kirkies.
I should have said the Pistons.
All right. I don't know if we've found it yet. I think, should people just go like it, like whatever idea they like on your Facebook and put their ideas on there?
They should. There's already a little comment thread going, so if you search that, listener Derek likes Kirkies as well, but that's just dumb because I don't want to be the Beyonce of this podcast.
I'm just kidding, it's your podcast, you're allowed to be the Beyonce.
But Kirkies, like, what, like it's funny when you think about it, but if I were to say it like a few years from now, every, you know, if you weren't a part of this conversation, you'd be like, the guy named his listeners after him. That's
and also funny. That's bound to become a sex move at some point.
The Kirky.
This guy gave me a Kirky last night. It was pretty wild.
What would it involve?
A lot of people.
I just make up the word.
30,000 people.
I just know when I see it. Oh, that's a Kirky right there. A dirty Kirky.
You've heard of Bukkake? It's a little massive. This is a little more massive.
Oh man,
you had to go there.
It's more like Bukkake.
Oh God,
turn it up, Bukkake.
Please God, make it stop.
So I personally think Pissers along these lines,
no.
Or Seattleites, but you know, I can't really think of any.
What about like Psychologite? How do you how do you combine psychology and Seattleite?
Seattle.
I'm gonna put the Pistons out there on the little thing. The Pistons. Okay. It's a good basketball team. Good podcast.
Probably, you know, trademarked.
God, what else? Would
the Pistoliers,
or like the Freuds out there, or
the,
please God, people send in good ideas.
The Sex Pistons.
Yeah. This is gonna happen to you. This is what you're gonna be called. So you should care.
Yeah.
More than I even do.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for another episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us. And please donate and please go to the Facebook page and weigh in on this. That would be great. Thanks a lot.
Bye, guys.
So long. Farewell. Avida zena da.
Tochu, unchu, unchu. That was funny.